condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Welcome on back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. SP Futures down 28.50. They were up last night, but not anymore. NASDAQ Futures down 94, and we have the Dow is down 238. Was down a little bit more. Kevin, how are you?
I am doing okay. It's Friday, weekend coming.
I'm pissed off. I did a somewhat bearish position yesterday for a few of my clients. Now I'm wondering why I didn't do it for everybody and why I didn't do it bigger. Just saying, you know.
Well,
the way the world is.
Regret for the past is a waste of spirit.
Yes. What did your friend Kung Fu say? No man can be the man he was. He can only be the man he can be.
Yeah, that's pretty high quality double talk, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, that's the whole idea, right? Hey, before we get too much involved in the market here, because I have things I want to talk to you about regarding valuation and maybe David, who was around. I'm not aging the fellow, but Dave, wasn't there a? I seem to recall, even though I can't remember the details, in 2000, when things were to the moon. Not saying that we're going to crash here, and I'm not making any. Wasn't there one or two IPOs that came out at some absurd price, and the market like caved right after that? There were no connection, but weren't there like a couple of particular IPOs that came out at some absurd price, and the market kind of caved right after? They essentially were the top. I can't remember who they were. Can you?
No, I can't remember the name of those stocks. I know what you're talking about, though.
But there were one or two that just like were the poster child for "You got to be kidding me." They came out at like 200, and a month later they were like 20 or something.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Kevin, I was sometimes in this, you know, everybody calls me virtually everybody, even people closer to me are, the more you know, I'm this Luddite. This is total non, you know, I don't know the new technologies, blah, blah, blah. I know enough of it, you know, so I'm not that bad. But this thing, I was reading this thing about, Dick, don't call me Richie Allen, and this Cooperstown thing. And now, one family who sort of, gave him the money for Cooperstown years and years ago, like the granddaughter kind of runs it, but some bizarre story. And the rules, I mean, even to me, are exceptionally anal. They've got people on this, in these committees for essentially these old dudes trying to pick up people who have maybe fallen through the crack in their era. Because for those that, all right, help me here, both you guys, you have to get, it's the Baseball Writers Association that votes, and if you're not on 75% of the ballots, you're out. And you're on there for, what, 15 years, and then you're just gone.
15 years, I think.
And if you were not popular, if you didn't play in New York or Boston, whatever, or didn't win World Series where people saw you in the World Series, I mean, I honestly believe, as spectacular as he was, and a deserving Hall of Famer, that if Brooks Robinson would have played on a regular team and didn't happen to have, you know, like 30 spectacular plays in postseason play, he wouldn't have come close to the Hall of Fame. Even though he was, you know, he said he was the second best third baseman of his era. But Cleet Boyer was better, and Cleet Boyer is nowhere near the Hall of Fame. He just never got to the World Series.
And Cleet Boyer wasn't the hitter that Robinson was, who was not a great hitter, but was a good hitter.
Thought he was like 270. He was nowhere near there in his bat. I'll look that up. We should look that up. But I mean, what I'm saying is, a lot of it is my Reggie Jackson. If he'd have toiled on the Kansas City, whatever, you know, instead of Oakland and New York. He's a great ball player, but he's just another great ball player that walks its way through. I mean, anyway, that's not about Ray. But the story is, one of the guys here is one of the old ducks that's on his committee. Couldn't make it to the meeting. Was it Jim Bunning or one of the guys? Well, they postponed the thing for COVID for 4 months. And then one of the guys here, Tim, I'll dig through here. But one of the people who has to vote was sick and couldn't make it to the meeting. They wouldn't let him put his vote in from not being, you have to be there. Which is, you know, it's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Or in other words, everybody else in the world can do virtual, but we can't do virtual.
Right. The guy didn't, but we're talking about people
and
that are...
L, you can record it when you do it virtual.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so they're really talking about five or six guys. They had this study, and help me here, one of you guys. They went back to talk about people who should be in the Hall of Fame and weren't. And everybody had a million opinions about just about everybody. And they went through everybody's, all those guys, people that should be in there. And it really came down to like four or five people that really should have been in the hall and that weren't. It was Dick Allen, Jim Cott, Tony Leiva, and Ron Santo. Look, there might have been a fifth that got in there as well. Am I correct or not? It came down to like those guys. And the guy, Bob Watson, if you remember him? He was a,
yeah. The bull.
And he, last minute, he became ill and couldn't travel to San Diego for the meeting, and they wouldn't take his vote. Which is, you know, so absurd. So now the guy's dead, and he, you know, he'll get in at some point, but then who's gonna give his speech? Maddie Weber? I mean, for God's sake. And what are we doing here?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think, and I said this when you sent me the article. You know, I think a mindfulness of some of these candidates' ages and their physical conditions is important. Not that you put a guy in because he's ill, but because you know if you're going to put a guy in and there is anything going on with him, you probably want to do it when he's still alive. Same thing as some of these guys get much older. And I gave you the example of, you know, Notre Dame's basketball Ring of Honor, and I was sitting there for about 3 years going, you know, Tommy Hawkins deserves to be in, and he's really getting up there in years, and they did get him in time. So, you know, I think those kinds of things are really, they're important to consider.
I want to have a question. When you emailed that last night, what under what planet are we on that there would be any reluctance whatsoever for Notre Dame to put Tommy Hawkins in the ring?
It isn't a reluctance. It's there's a couple of factors that I know go into theirs. First of all, they typically will do just one per year, so there's one big year. It's not what I would do, by the way, but it's one per year. So there have been a couple of years when they've done two, but not many, and I don't think they're doing anyone this year, of course. And so they have a ceremony. Now, so you've got a bunch of people that you got, because this just started up, what, 10 years ago at Tops. And so you start saying, okay, well, who's got to be in? Well, you know, Austin Carr's got to be in. Adrian Dantley's got to be in. The first one they put in was Lou Kerengode on his senior day, you know, and Lou Kerengode certainly belongs in. He's a two-time conference player of the year, first-team All-American, one of the, you know, near the top of Notre Dame's record books and all kinds of things. So as you go on, you start doing it. Another factor is when are they available? Because several of these guys are working in, you know, in the NBA, as an example. You know, Dantley, they had to catch Dantley when he was an assistant coach. They had to catch him when his team was in the Midwest. I think it was Denver he was with. When Denver was in the Midwest and had a day off, and Notre Dame had a game that day off.
Right, right. So, I was there.
So you get some of those logistics things that come into play, too.
Well, for those that don't know, that Tommy Hawkins was a watershed player for Notre Dame and really a lot of teams, because back, was he early 60s, or was he before that?
No, he was, he might have been late 50s into early 60s.
But he
was a guy who'd pull down like 17 rebounds a game.
He also was a man of a different color. He was black. And yeah. when he came to Notre Dame, I don't know if you know the story, David, this is what bugs me today about leadership or lack thereof, and of course Kevin teaches classes on this, so I'm stepping on his toes, but when he came to Notre Dame had played, I'm going to say that at that time, teams like Kentucky and a bunch of others had never had a black player. I'm guessing there were quite a few in the South that never had a black player. And the Irish had a bunch of these teams on their schedule. And I seem to recall from the story was is that Ted Hesburgh, who was the head of the university at the time, didn't kick this to a coach, didn't kick this to an assistant. He called all those other schools and said, we have this guy, and by the way, we're bringing him. And if he's not welcome, if he's not staying with the team, whatever, we're canceling. What do you want to do? And evidently, they were, I don't know about reluctantly, but they were invited. Did they have to cancel any of them, Kevin? I don't recall if they
not
did.
Not to my knowledge.
But Ted didn't say, you make the call. He made the call, which is a different style of leadership than I think we have today.
And what it is it's setting an ethical tone that cascades throughout. And that's, clearly that's one of the most important things that a leader has to do. Or a good leader has to do. So, Hesburgh understood that there were some things, there were many things that you delegate, but there are some things, and the ethical tone of, in his case, the university was not something that could be delegated.
Well, plus this is not coach to coach. This is person who runs the place to person who runs the place. It was not a coaching decision whether you should have an African American show up at your place. I mean, right? It's just not. Well, first of all, it shouldn't even be the chairman's decision. The answer should be yes. But in those days, and everybody. But it was I wonder if you could even Google this.
The idea was we don't play basketball with people who don't welcome African Americans.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And that's the rules.
That's right.
We don't play any sport with people who won't.
That's right. And I'm going to say when do you suppose the last big school in the South was that? Well, I remember what's his name, National Guard, when the first black guy went to Alabama, right? That was wasn't the governor out there, leading the charge against
Mississippi?
Who was the governor? He got shot. What the hell was his name? He ran for president.
George Wallace.
Yeah. All right, so Kevin, we had yesterday. I know we have some.
Before you get away from sports, here we got to hit the Bears' offense.
By the way, your arguments.
You guys discussed it yesterday.
Your arguments were right along my line.
At least one guy was full of crap, and I just want to make sure that we understand. So let me just run down.
You're talking about Mr.
Bears
Stats.
Were number one in 1985 in scoring offense. They had 450. They scored 456 points. San Francisco was second with 411. But if you subtract out all of the defense and special teams TDs, the Bears still led with 407. The Jets moved past San Francisco to number two with 379. So they had a very, very comfortable lead in scoring. They were number one in rushing yards. They were number five in rush yards per attempt. But they were a strong rushing team, so they ran a lot. That meant that they were only number 20 in passing yards, but they were number 6 in yards per attempt passing. They were number 4 in net yards passing, which is sack adjusted. They were number 6 in adjusted net yards per attempt, which is a sack and interception adjusted stat. And they were number 9 in team passer rating, so they were clearly in the upper third of passing offense. And then there, I think it was Matt that talked about Walter Payton being just kind of a shadow of his former self. Yeah, he was number 3 in the league in rushing yards with 1,551, number 3 in yards per game, number 4 in rushing attempts, and number 8 in yards per attempt, and only two of the guys ahead of him in yards per attempt were 1,000-yard rushers, and in those cases, just a little, nowhere near his 1,555. And I'm not done yet with Peyton. He also had 49 catches for 483 yards. Total yards, 2,034. And as you know, he was an outstanding blocker. He happened to be 3 for 5 passing that year for 96 yards and a touchdown, which gave him 143.7 quarterback rating. And he won the Burt Bell Award for NFL Player of the Year, which I think hardly makes him a shadow of himself.
Mr. Statweber.
And then just one more, a little more about McMahon. He started 11 games, played in 13 of the 16. He was number 20 in passing yards because they didn't throw as much, but he was number 5 in yards per attempt. He was number 9 in yards per completion. He was number 8 in completion percentage, number 10 in TD percentage, 8 in interception percentage, 8th lowest interception, number 7 in quarterback rating, and was named to the NFC team for the Pro Bowl.
Mr. Stat Weber, as they say, as time has gone by, Kevin, the 85 team was all defense. What do they say in the man who shot Liberty Valance? When the facts conflict with the fable, print the fable or something like that? The legend.
Yep.
And, yeah, I mean, you don't normally have, you know, a crummy offense with two Hall of Famers spilling off it, you know, type of thing.
Yeah. Now, one other thing about that Bears offense, too. When it was time for a game-clinching drive, you know, the kind of drive where, you know, you're sitting on maybe a 7-point lead or even a 10-point lead, and you get the ball back with 7 minutes to play, and you never give it up, that was that.
Oh, yeah. Well, look at the old line. I mean, we had two number one draft picks off very good teams, I mean, Colbert and Van Horn. I'm going to say that the only reason why I think Tommy Thayer was a three, and the only reason why he was a three is because the Bears were the only ones dumb enough to not realize he'd already signed a contract with the Arizona Wranglers, right? I'm going to say he probably would have been, I don't think he would have been a one, but he might have been a two. Bortz was a four, right? And I think, I don't know about
him. No, I don't know if Bortz was that high, but Bortz was a defensive lineman in college at Iowa, and they immediately converted him to offensive line, so it took a year or so for him to get it to get good, to get competent.
Yeah, well, I know Jimbo Colbert said about him, he goes, I don't know, he doesn't look all that good, but I'd never see him get beat. You know, and I don't know about Ilgi, where he came from. That's a question.
He was also Iowa, and I believe he was an undrafted free agent and wound up being one of the best centers of all time.
But, you know, he said the interesting part was he was just happy that the fridge took it easy on him in practice. He said that guy lined up across me. He said he had such amazing talent that, you know, he could have destroyed you every play, you know. But anyway, the...
Yeah, and I'll share a note that I sent you last night about Van Horn. He played on a USC line that had five first-round draft picks, a first-round draft pick at every single position.
Now, did Bill Frelick, was he a Hall of Famer?
He was might be.
Because he was the considered the best.
Yeah, Frelick and Covert played together, and they also, I mean, they overlapped with Mark May and with Russ Grimm, who is also a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, Pittsburgh had huge lines in those days.
So those pit lines were pretty darn good. That was the Marino years. But the USC, they had Charles White and Marcus Allen when Heisman's running behind them. But they had Dan Mosbar, who played for the Raiders. They had Brad Buddy, who was a first-round draft pick, played quite a while for the Chiefs. They had Van Horn, of course, Roy Foster, who was a longtime stalwart at Miami, and of course Anthony Munoz, who is one of the best tackles of all time.
The best of all time. I, once in a while, I used to see Van Horn in Oz Park. Man, he was walking slow. I think football beats you up pretty good. He was walking. I don't know if he's.
I think it does. I think it's really, really hard on the back, the shoulder. You know, those kinds of things that, you know, when your body has to move,
yeah,
they ache.
Well, I remember we played softball with and Dougie Buffon was on our team, and he'd come out and the routine he would have to go through just to be loose enough to play softball. I mean, walk out. He looked like he was 70, and all of a sudden he'd do a couple of runs and jag and do this and do some this and do some stretches, and half hour later he was ready to go, and he was fine for a while. But like none of the other guys had to do that. Of course he's a little older, but still, it's bizarre. I was reading this. What's the story? You can fool all the people all the time, and some of the time you can fool some of the people all the time, and you can't fool all the people all the time. I couldn't help but look at this thing about the European Union yesterday. It agrees on a $2 trillion package, all right, to deal with this, to rebuild the faltering economies and COVID and all that stuff. And this is interesting. Has that to do with, evidently, people can veto the thing over there if they think some part of the group isn't going by the rule of law and they're pissed off at Poland and somebody else. Anyway, But it says that the it's a multinational financial framework, which the EU will centrally raise money in financial markets and hand out as both loans and grants to member states. On the surface of that, Kevin or David, does that sound right? The package comprised the EU's $1.1 trillion, which is $1.3 trillion, multi-annual financial framework, which is paid into by every member state and distributed across the bloc over a seven-year period, and a special COVID recovery fund of 750 billion euro, $858, for which the EU will centrally raise money on financial markets and hand out as both loans and grants to member states. Now that makes intuitive sense to just about everybody, correct? And but what's wrong with it? What the hell's wrong with it? I mean, there is there wrong. Is it just me being myself here and being grumpy?
No, it's probably you being grumpy.
Definitely.
Well, David, I'll ask you as a bazillion year floor member, when your rate is negative and the 10-year rate in the euro dollar is -0.59. Who the bleep are you going to borrow anything from? How exactly do you go out and borrow money when you're not paying somebody, you're taking money from them? How the hell are you going to raise $1 trillion like that?
Just print the money.
Well, that's right. But see, now you know that. But now but the problem is the European Central Union is going to go out and, quote, borrow the dough. Right, but the buyer is going to be in the same two-step crap we're doing here with the Federal Reserve. The buyer is going to be the European Central Bank, which net-net means they're printing it. But 99.9% of the people in the world don't get that. You do because you've been a trader for 100 years. Kevin does because he has to listen to me. And I do, basically...
I don't have to, but I do.
But once you're on, you sort of have to for at least a little bit. but I mean...
Yeah, until you hear that dial tone.
Yeah. why can't we at some point tell the truth here? You know, we're going to print this dough and we're going to send it out. They say we're borrowing it when we're paying, 1% for 10 years or 0.9. I guess you can sort of get away with that a little bit. But if you're negative interest rates, how do you walk out and tell somebody, I'm going to go out and borrow $1 trillion? Oh, by the way, from who? Who? I pitied, what did Mr. T say? I pitied a man who's that foolish, right? Or so I pitied a fool.
Yeah, well, or you just sort of envision the EU as wimpy going, I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Yes. I just don't get it. Why don't we just, and when we do this, it has an issue to it, which is kind of leading me to my next stuff. This Airbnb, at one point yesterday, is worth $100 billion, right? The company's market cap. Now, is the one, one of the guests, one of the lady guests on CNBC says, a year ago at this time, the guy is running around to essentially angel investors paying high interest rates just to keep the company afloat. Now it's worth $100 billion during a crisis?
And it may have extra value during the crisis, so your question is, how long will the crisis last, and is this a permanent change? Now, there is some stuff out there about the restaurant industry saying, well, we are going to see some permanent changes about this. A lot of the fast food chains are now looking to move a significant percentage of their restaurants to drive-through only. And that'll cut their costs and probably not as much the volume. In other words, what they're saying, the cost reduction is going to be much more significant than whatever volume they lose by not having people dine in. So you may see some structural changes that work well for them. For some of these alternatives that are doing better in the crisis than that are sort of outperforming, but I don't know where it's all going to go. So what's the delivery place?
Kevin, you and I can be in the delivery business tomorrow. I mean, the whole idea of
no barriers to entry other than some commercial licensing.
I mean, this goes back to eBay. How big of a business? I mean, obviously it's pretty big. But I mean, can a country survive from 200 million or 300 million people selling each other crap out of their garages? And obviously eBay's evolved into a lot more than that. But I mean, we really, I mean, these guys, the DoorDash, they're all in the same. Then we got Yelp. I mean, all these guys, I mean, we're in the same business, right? So now Lyft, instead of taking people, is going to take hamburgers. Now they're worth $100. There's only.
Oh, they've been doing it. So has Uber. Uber Eats.
Well, Airbnb, I mean, the idea of people staying all at home, that's what I'm talking about, is Airbnb yesterday. I mean, these guys, I don't know. I mean, the whole world's going to become a hotel. I don't even know if I decide to rent my place to Airbnb, what's the cut of the shareholder? The guys have never made any money, have they? Actually, they made some money.
Don't know.
It's
going to be interesting, and with the various IPOs of the week, it's going to be interesting to see what the insiders do with their stock. How quickly do they unload it and take the profit?
Well, that's right. And Dr. J was on CNBC yesterday, and I think he's right. He says these guys are coming out with smaller and smaller pieces of the company that they're IPOing. So if everybody wants in, they have to jam that. You know, if you come out with 20% of the place, and everybody has to own it, right? Everybody wants a piece of it. Just like our lead-in says, everybody wants a piece of this one. You end up driving these things up there, but I've got these guys at $100 billion is one of the top 65 countries in the world now in valuation. Do we really think that Airbnb is one of the top 65 countries in the world? By any stretch? I mean, I don't see how it could be. Anyway, I think we head off the break.
Hey, when we come back, we need to talk about China news this week.
Oh, yeah, S&P futures down 29, Nasdaq futures down 103. Again, these guys were up last night marginally, right? S&P's up 6 last night when I nodded off. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing Rock Bank Stacks and Jacks. Time out. We have Mr. Dave Scatina on the board today, and we have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. David, this one's for you as you try and be healthy in life. This is from your friend of your buddy Chris Rock. I don't get high, but sometimes wish I did. That way, when I messed up in life, I'd have an excuse. But right now, there's no rehab for stupidity.
That is a fact.
That is a fact. And as the comedian Ron Weitz did a whole comedy routine around the notion that you can't fix stupid.
What stupid is stupid does? Was that...
And then that's, and Forrest Gump was right on. Actually, it was Forrest's mom, but,
God. SP futures down 27, NASDAQ futures down 97, Dow futures down 186, they were down well into the twos a little bit ago. So in fact, we're coming back here, even though it doesn't sound like it, look like it. Nikkei down 103.4%, Shanghai down 26.8%, Hang Seng up 95.4%. There's been many days over the last several months where the Shanghai and the Hang Seng went different directions. I don't know exactly what's causing that, but it's been a phenomenon. DAX down 218, that's 1.7%. These guys have been increasingly somewhat volatile up and down. FTSE down 61, that's 1%. CAC around down 53, that's 1% as well. As a way of review, yesterday the Dow was down 69, S&P down 4, NASDAQ down, up 66. We were down on Wednesday, as everybody recalls. Bonds back at 0.89. The Bund minus 0.64, so they're actually going more negative. Japan positive 0.02, where they've been forever. Oil unchanged at 46.78. Brent down 6 cents, 50.19. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.58. The warm start to the winter is taking this natural gas down like 40 cents. Boy, that's an ouchie if you were long that natural gas. Our Bob unchanged at 131. And we've got gold down 250. 18.34 is its big rally earlier in the week has kind of fizzled. Silver down 17 cents, 23.92. Copper down 5 cents, 3.52. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. 6:37 in Chicago. Traffic this morning for a Friday is pretty light. Everything seems to be clear for the time being. Let's hope it stays that way. Weather today, currently in Chicago, is 38 and cloudy. The highs, 44. We're going to have a bunch of rain tonight and some snow this weekend. In Phoenix, it's currently 49 and partly cloudy. The high today, 64 and also partly cloudy. In sports, in the NFL, Thursday night, the Rams beat the Patriots 24-3. Sunday football, Bears host the Texans, and Arizona is at the Giants. To college football, Michigan and Ohio State game canceled. Again. Saturday, Illinois takes on Northwestern. Iowa plays Wisconsin. In the NBA, the Bulls open up their preseason and play the Rockets. Back to you.
Why was the game on, off, no, on, and now it's off again? What's going on there?
COVID.
Well, that you can you can pull that one out of the... Speaking of COVID, just before we get rolling on something else here, Kevin, I wanted to ask you, one of the things that appears to be holding up the, or part of the negotiation on this stimulus package, is the idea of liability people being... The liability for people getting COVID, businesses and so forth. And the Republicans want a pretty fair, liability waiver for just about every firm. And the Democrats don't want to come up with that. Now, whether it's a time frame or whether it's something, I don't know. But whether, if you if you're on the right, you're saying it's just the Democrats, basically bending over and spreading them for their trial lawyer group, which they can't seem to ever say no to. Or on the other side, people say you can't give businesses a carte blanche on anything because all they do is take advantage of it. And I'm going to say both sides are probably correct a little bit in those analysis, but the bottom line is there was a young lady, she's still with us, and she took some, Kevin, you're probably more familiar with this than me. There was a rule, I'll say, in Michigan that they want you to take your standardized test at the high school, your SATs or all your, I don't know which one it was. So they told this girl she had to come into the high school to take the test. Now her story was that her mother's got some disease, which doesn't, I'm not making light of it. She didn't want to go anywhere. She's locked in, I'm in my house, blah, 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 blah. So she reluctantly comes and takes the test and, wears two masks, not one. And lo and behold, ends up with COVID, and now she's on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere, all over the damn place. Bottom line is, she probably wants money from somebody. What is it? What am I supposed to be saying here? My conclusion should be what? Masks don't work? Or why? How could I ever possibly think that this girl didn't stop for a Sunday along the way, or stop? I mean, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but how can anybody conclusively prove that she came right from home in a sterilized car with two masks on and only got it at that school?
Right. So is there ability to prove where she got it? One, number two. But the real question, here's the question, are there prescribed, I'll call them controls for the generic term, but are there, things prescribed that schools and every other public building or business should do to keep the place clean and as safe as possible? And if you do all of those things, should you be liable? And to me, the answer to that is absolutely not. Now, if you willingly make your place less safe, then, look, in a libertarian world, you'd be saying, hey, it's up to people to know what the standards are, what consumers, workers, students, whomever, know what the standards are, to ask, to get the information they need and to make an informed decision about going into a place. Well, we know that's not going to happen, but is it reasonable to expect businesses and schools and other public entities to comply with a set of reasonable practices that are going to keep people as safe as possible? And I think that's probably yes. And certainly, if you don't do it, then you create liability for yourself. That's true now in every business with all kinds of safety rules, some of which are imposed and some of which are assumed. When you have predictable risk, you have to do something to mitigate it. Once you've done something to mitigate it, it's called risk for a reason. You can't make it go away entirely.
But how do you get out of the trick bag? And these are just questions that, since you teach these classes, know more about it than me, but I honestly don't know what the answers are. But I was on a board, again, it's not a board of General Motors or any place, but it was CBOE, and once in a while we come up with these questions, Kevin, and they're very sticky, and they're formulated, especially if some bleephead attorney is giving you this story about risk, and of course they can help you out, they always want to be hired to do this. I mean, what is the defense of PTI Securities on guests when we're in a building and our office? What do we have to do to stop somebody from getting the common cold?
Well, again, it's risk and reward. And so what do you have to do? You probably don't have to do anything, because the common cold is not considered deadly, even though it could be.
In the immortal words of Audrey's Asian doctor, Dr. Shu, he goes, one of the problems with the COVID is, he goes, most of society don't have any idea how deadly a common cold and a common flu normally are. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that kills people that are compromised. Colds being one of them. But I'm saying is, no matter what you do,
and how much burden is on the individual too.
Right.
But now, in the case of the SAT, if you don't have any choices, it's kind of interesting what's gonna force the students' hands. Are there other testing centers where you can go take the SAT that you may trust more than your school? Are there things like, right now there's an online service I know of called ProctorU, where you get the camera put on you, you have to demonstrate that you don't do anything, and the camera is watching you take the test so that you can, and will flag you for cheating if you do anything that is abnormal.
Why does the term ProctorU make me shudder just a tad?
Yeah, I know. It sounds like something the proctologist would do. And in a way it is. It's just the cyber version of it.
We need to
get into this China stuff, because it's
okay,
a
but
big
deal. Just final question is, so what's the damage? What does she want from these people? She want $1 million? She want $500,000?
I don't know.
All right, so
did mom get sick or did she get sick?
She tested positive. So I don't know if anybody's sick.
Right.
I did.
Okay, so she tested positive. So what's her damage?
Well, that's what I'm saying. What's it going to be? Plus, what you're saying.
You calculate the damages. If she lost some income or something like that, then you have the damages. Otherwise, no. There's really, go ahead, sue for a dollar.
But what if some bleep and somebody, I won't name some politician's group, and maybe even shouldn't be there, says that every building has to wipe down elevators after every use. Well, come on. I mean, what do you do? Wait in the lobby when you already tested positive, and the minute they don't, you hop in and blame it on the building and want $1 million?
Maybe? Yeah, understood. Understood. I've stayed in a hotel a couple of times, and they of course don't wipe down every elevator. They do sanitize every room, and then they hermetically seal it so that when you get there, it's been sanitized and nobody's been in there. I don't care. Either way, I don't care. But
so what's all right? What's going on in China?
Okay, so I mentioned this on the way as we were wrapping up, that Friday we have to talk about China, and I mentioned this on Wednesday, and we've had two stories break since then. So the first one, and the one I knew at the time, was about this economics professor speaking in China. Are you aware of the story?
No, I'm not, actually, but go ahead.
Okay, so this learner. Guy's given a speech in China about trade. And it is the Chinese government has had it taken down on all their social media, but too late. It's available in the U.S. now. And he's speaking, and he says, between the 1970s and 2016, did the U.S. and China solve problems quickly, no matter what the issue was? And he says, I'm going to throw out something that's a little explosive. It's because we have people at the top. He claimed that the Wall Street allies with influence at the core inner circle are their old friends. They have a channel to power. He said the influence stopped with Trump. The Trump administration is in a trade war with us, and why can't we fix the Trump administration? He described a particularly useful agent, an American who is now a Chinese citizen. That's a little bit of a tangent. He said the Obama administration was easy to manipulate. That changed when Trump came in. Wall Street can't fix Trump because of previous conflicts he's had with them. He said the Wall Street contacts tried to help with trade but couldn't do much. And then he goes on to say, but now we're seeing that Biden was elected. The traditional elite, the political elite, they're close to Wall Street. That Trump has been saying Biden, and then, this was the last one, Trump has been saying Biden's son had some sort of foundation. He said, who helped him with that foundation? Paused, smile, got it?
Yeah.
And then gets applause from the audience. So, that's kind of interesting, this idea that the, somebody who is an economics professor, which means he's very tied in to the Chinese government, because you can't be a professor there if you're not tied into the Chinese government, is claiming that they have influence at the core of U.S. power. That's kind of interesting.
I'm going to say anybody who thought otherwise, the only word I could say to you is duh.
Yeah, but this is sounding more like they're compromised. It's not. Yes, I know, especially via Wall Street. They want access to Chinese markets, and they're willing to do whatever.
Kevin, what
are they willing to influence government policy for it? And I think that answer is, on behalf of the Chinese government, the answer to that is, at least according to this professor, yes.
Kevin, I don't know, I've told this story a couple of times, but I was used to be a member of the Economic Club of Chicago, and one night, I showed up and I ended up talking to this young lady, and her firm was looking about doing something over in China. And the meeting before, I had met a lady from the Chinese consulate, still had her card. I didn't wear my suit very often, so still in my suit pocket. How about that, David? from the month before meeting. And so I essentially hooked the two together. And I don't know if they ever came of it, but either that or I was out of the loop, one or the other. But that's not exactly my forte, is overseas. And basically, the lady told me that if you were going to put something over in China, that you would go to the consulate and they would figure out what you were doing, widget company or whatever the hell it was, button manufacturer, and they would figure out like the best spot for you, and they would give you a guy, for lack of a better term. I'm sure it was mostly guys over there, but and then you had essentially your political person that would walk you through the whole deal. And to the point where, and that's why you never usually had labor problems, and you never had this because you're paying this guy, and you know, and whatever. So there was this whole process of going through. Let's start from our. You know, if you listen to all the contributors from Stocks and Jocks and put it all together, which is hard to do if you're not the host because you're not listening every day. What we've really done with China, we've offloaded slave labor, child labor, any kind of horrible working conditions, and pollution. We've essentially offshored them, right? And China is willing to do that. And it's a situation where, as I had our buddy, not Dr. J, our other doc, had a client who really wanted to play Olympia Fields, right? So I'm thinking, how the hell do I get somebody on Olympia Fields? So of course I called Doc, and the next day we're on the place, right? And our host is a guy who's a former priest. Of course, they've been married twice. They used to teach in Korea, and he said at one point, he said he was teaching about labor unions, and a guy from the CIA came into his classroom and said, "We don't want these people here learning about labor unions." And he said, after about 12 martinis, "When you live here in the U.S., America is the greatest country on earth. If you live overseas, it sucks. All we are is the foreign policy initiative for big business, and that's all we are." And he goes, and everybody outside the country knows that. He said, "But you got to be outside the country for a while to see it happen, especially in a developing country." He goes, and so the idea that there isn't some sort of a massive connection. How does this thing with China, with Trump, you know, doing, I'm going to say, the best he could, even though let's put it this way, Kevin, if you were in that spot and you had the same view of China that Trump, China would be in a much bigger world of hurt right now than with Trump in there, because you would be focused and he's not. He's more watching the TV and tweeting something out than he is actually worrying about. Tell me how the hell, out of this whole mess in 4 years, that the company has come out smelling like a rose is this Nike. Where, when we had the guy in from the Muslim country to China, is essentially enslaving and making these people work in essentially concentration camp, Nike's all over it. You know, Apple's all over it. How is it that none of that stuff ever got disturbed if we actually were serious? I think Trump actually was serious. I just don't think he ever had the fortitude. Plus,
You're fighting against a tidal wave.
Oh, sure.
You're trying to take on a tidal wave when you do it. So you can make some inroads, and you can change some policies, but it really takes a long time. But let me jump to the other two stories, and then, you know, we'll talk about how they all fit together, because then Wednesday afternoon we learned about Feng, the spy who was involved with Congressman Eric Swalwell for 4 years. There are varying stories about whether they had a romantic relationship or not. I don't know that it's proven that they did. It is known that she had romantic relationships with, quote, two Midwestern mayors who haven't been named publicly, and attended with them mayors' conferences and things like, you know, those kinds of events. She worked with Swalwell, was the liaison to Chinese Americans in his district. Perhaps that's a way to find out who gets involved with American politics in what way.
Yeah, but it's going to come as a big
social scoring activities. She placed at least one intern in Swalwell's office, and if she spent 4 years, they're saying, you know, the party line here is she got nothing out of it. If she wasn't getting anything out of it, she wouldn't have spent 4 years on it. She would have moved on, you know, after months if it was going to go nowhere. So she was definitely getting something out of it. How many other operatives like that do you suppose are working in the U.S.?
Kevin, I know this
on Congress.
For
and how compromised are our people in political offices?
I'm going to say that this is way too tender for David's tender ears, but there are people in this world that have been known to have sex for reasons other than fun and wanting to.
But she was a spy who, as soon as she got discovered, as soon as they learned that she was being investigated, boogied out of the country.
Well, I just got my...
So he may have been having sex for other reasons.
Yeah.
She would have been having sex for her job.
What did, in the immortal words who wrote the Call of the Wild? Jack London. When he talked about the one dog spits, cold and calculating, even in his extreme moods. There's people like that.
Yeah. Now, so what I'm saying is, it may be true that Swalwell told her nothing, didn't say anything that would have compromised anything, but if she's involved in working in his office, there's lots of ways to get information that's really important.
Every time
really
the
sensitive.
Guy... she was on his computer.
And he's on the intelligence committee, so, he's definitely a good mark. Similarly, I went back and did a little digging. Remember that Dianne Feinstein had a driver who was a spy? He had a driver for 20 years who was a spy? Turns out there's a KPIX report from KPIX TV station in San Francisco from 2018 that didn't get a lot of publicity. The guy wasn't just her driver. He was the liaison to the Asian-American community for her and even attended the Chinese consulate functions on her behalf. That's another infiltration.
Kevin,
then, of course, the third story is yesterday's news about Hunter Biden and James Biden being under investigation, and they're saying it's for taxes. That's a crock. They are under investigation for transactions that have been flagged as potential criminal activity related to their dealings in China.
Well, the easiest way to get somebody from that, my friend who should have watched The Untouchables, is tax evasion.
Sure.
That's what put
but
Al...
But it's not a tax case, it's a transaction case.
But if you don't pay taxes on it, there's an easy way to get you on the rock. That's what got Capone on the rock, right? I don't care what you did.
And if you remember the fellow Tony Bobulinski, who fairly well dismissed despite being credible and despite being there at the time, he said that that the incoming president was involved, that he knew about all of this, and Hunter emails that he corroborated were genuine by showing his own copies of it. We know that the big guy, whoever that is, and it's understood that the big guy is Joe, was getting a piece of the action, because what were they really selling? They were selling influence. They were selling access.
Why don't the American people, this is one of the reasons why I am so disappointed in what Trump gave us, because I have been waiting my whole lifetime politically, not personally, for there to be a president from the outside that actually did clean the swamp. Because I did some research way back in the day regarding, and once in a while I spout it out on the show, do you think there's no connection between Bush 1 being the head of the CIA and the kid being on the board of the Silverado Savings and Loan that was the CIA front? Making money there. I mean, Kevin, this has been endemic through our society. We can't seem to clean it up. And we never review it, and it just goes on and on. We can't even figure out who the hell killed Kennedy, for God's sake. I mean, this stuff just lingers, and it festers in our past. We let this happen. We're so stupid sometimes. I mean, I read the book Pearl Harbor Ghost we talked about the other day. These people were paranoid about Japanese infiltrating the island, doing some stuff, being an internal thing. They're more worried about the Japanese on the island than they were the guys on the aircraft carriers. And yet there was a spy there that every day went up to the huge overlook of Pearl Harbor, that's in every movie about Pearl Harbor, and took pictures every single day. Nobody said, gee, if I was a spy, where would I go? I'd go like right there. I'd go to the head of the Sears Tower and take pictures of what's coming and going in Chicago. And yet, I mean, we let this happen. The other day I got this thing from Quora. It said the reason why John Kennedy, the hero of PT-109, was shoved into operational duties. He was working in the Defense Department, Naval Department, and he was boffing some lady from Europe who they thought was a German spy. So they separated him from the spy by sending him off to the South Pacific. I mean, for God's sake, Kevin, how long is this? To think that these companies don't have influence, they've got all the influence. I mean, when you get Trump or Biden or Bush, and you sit them down in a room with, you put Bush in a room with the head of the seven oil companies, he must look like the third grader in there compared to those guys. And what do you think when Trump gets on the phone with the guy, the head of Apple and the head of Nike and these guys, and Trump's got 90 bazillion people that support him, well, he used to, that own Nike stock. Do you think that if all of a sudden he comes out and says these people are a bunch of crooks, and I'm not saying they are, and all of a sudden Nike opens up at $20, that the phone in the White House, if there is such a phone with a ringer on it, the thing never stops ringing for a week? I mean,
okay, and you're veering into that and sort of off of the topic of, you know, what is the influence? What's going to be done about it unless people start really waking up to what's happening here?
I'm going to say that there's nothing going to be done about it because it's going on for 50 years, and it pisses me off. And you and I are short-timers, Kevin. I mean, not short-timers like we're going anywhere tomorrow, but we're not. I mean, we don't have 30 years to fix it. And I'm going to say 30 years from now, it's still going to be going on. I hate it.
Well, it's also interesting that media is now willing to cover some of this stuff a little bit now. In some cases, not much, but a little bit now that Biden's been elected and Trump's out, because I've said this before, I believe the purge is underway. We're probably a year away from President Harris.
Maybe, but I first came on one of these shows 20 years ago. And my first day, I said, because the issue was China, Kevin, and I said, this, like the COVID, where people are giving it to people who don't even know they have it, is a problem. I said, if you and I are sitting in the Oval Office as a two-headed monster, back when the Romans used to have two consuls, right, not one, we'd sit there and all of a sudden Bill Gates comes running in, or Dave Scatina, and says, hey, look at these bleeps. All my Beatles songs are being copied over in China and not paying me any royalties. These guys suck. All of a sudden Bill Gates comes in. Jesus Christ. These guys, there's 90 bazillion computers in China, and they bought, you know, one issue of Microsoft Word. By the way, the entire country's got Microsoft Word. This blows. We got to do something with these guys. And the next guy comes in is the guy from Pepsi. Wait a minute. There's a billion people over there drinking a Pepsi every day. Don't do anything. I mean, I can't imagine the cross current of pressure you get with people over there, with the guys that are there. And what are you going to do about it? The answer is you don't do anything for 30 years.
Understood, Tom. And I think that's important. But when it translates to the official policy of the government, it's one thing to do nothing. It's another for the government to work on their behalf.
I'm going
to
say that you're going to find,
and as you noted earlier, that's exactly what's happening, and we have to stop supporting people who do things like, oh, I don't know, slave labor, indentured servitude, you know, and who slaughter people and who are, you know, doing different kinds of genetic engineering.
We got to dash, you know, Kevin.
We have to stop doing that.
I don't disagree, but we have to dash here. I will say one thing, and maybe David can be the referee. You walk into a local bar and you look at or wherever it is, or high school, or somebody who's getting money from UCLA that's getting money from Nike. You walk in and say, "Hey, I love your Nike shoes. By the way, do you know those guys? You just gave money to a slave labor camp." All of a sudden, the hands are going to go up to the ears, and they're going to walk out of the bar. They don't want to hear it, Kevin.
100%.
Nobody wants to hear it. I do.
Actually, because I have students that when we talk about this and when we watch some of the video documentation that's out there, say, "I'll never buy Nike again," or "I'm throwing away all my Nike."
There
are people who are inclined, who are so inclined.
You know that I'm one of those people, and I'm your biggest ally. I'm just saying it's a tough nut is all I'm saying. Just saying. SP Futures down 25.
And the other thing is when we have the evidence with people involved, we have to do something about that.
We got all the evidence in the world about the slave.
Get rid of them.
With the slave labor camps with these guys, these Muslim dudes. Why isn't that front page news? It's not even any news. NASDAQ Futures down 82. Be right back. We have Colin when we come back, David?
Yeah, Colin, be right with us.
Okay.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
Hello, North Bank, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Dave Scantina on the board. SP Futures down 26, Nasdaq Futures down 82. These are actually better than we came in. So we were up 6 last night, then we were down 30-something, now we're down 25. Colin, how are you, buddy?
Chief, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Fired up this morning. I like it.
I'm trying to figure out who's playing what now. Michigan, Ohio State's off again. Now, evidently, the story coming from where the hell is Clemson? I don't even know where Clemson is. Is they want to bag the Clemson Notre Dame title game? Because what's the point? They're both going to get into playoffs anyway. So why do you need to play again and then play 2 weeks later? I mean, I'm sort of with that, but I mean, this is kind of an odd year, but why do you need to play that game, really?
Yeah, it's a great question, and you know, you look at some of the even Notre Dame's last game of the season being canceled against Wake Forest. Just that all these weird scenarios that are happening, and I don't think Ohio State's going to get it in. So, you know, that whole dynamic changes there, and like we talked about last week, just a really odd college football season. And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out here. And I was actually looking forward to that Notre Dame Clemson game. But it looks like we'll get that anyway. So,
well, I mean, it's kind of weird in that you have, I mean, what would you do if the two best teams in the country absolutely for sure were Iowa and Ohio State, and they were going to play in the Big Ten championship, and they were already 1-2 and going to play in the national championship game? I mean, do you really need them to play 2 weeks in a row? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no, you don't. You're absolutely right. We'll see what happens. But ready to jump into some picks if you are.
Yeah, hey, just a quick question. Last week obviously, I didn't want to come out and say I left my heart with BYU, BYU, but how do these teams that are not the perennial powerhouses come in and they flare and they look like they're going to really get good for a while, and then, I mean, I was Central Florida when they beat the Irish years ago. They were an up-and-coming team. Central Florida, I think now is like the second biggest university in the country, isn't it? But anyway, they had a good team, and now all of a sudden they've dropped off. I mean, Boise State looked like the darling for a while, and you get these teams, and all of a sudden somebody grabs the coach, and they go right back to whatever, or what happens with them?
Yeah, so UCF is a great example. Scott Frost, you know, really resurrected that program a few years back, and got him to an undefeated season, I want to say 3 years ago. And then he took his, you know, his dream job of going to Nebraska, obviously played at Nebraska. So after he left UCF, I mean, they're still a decent program, but they obviously are not on that level that Scott Frost brought them to. And then Scott Frost at Nebraska, they thought he'd be able to do the same thing that he did at UCF, and the results there have been pretty poor so far. So a lot of different factors I think probably recruiting the number one thing. I mean, Scott Frost is a hell of a coach, but you're just not going to get the recruits that you got for Central Florida down in that Florida area, obviously, to come up and play for Nebraska. So, and then BYU, interesting scenario that, you know, I know we covered that game last week. They ended up losing, but they took that game on within 3 days it was scheduled, because they said, we'll play anyone anywhere, because they want to prove that they can get into that, possibly get into a major bowl game on New Year's Day. And that backfired against them. And I think there's a lot of programs out there that won't do that, Chief. They won't take on that challenge of saying, yeah, you schedule the game, we'll play anyone at any time.
Well, those guys are a lot better than Appalachian State that Michigan lost 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right, so who do you got this week? Who do you got this week?
Let's get into it, Chief. I'll start in the college ranks. We're going to look at the Alabama Crimson Tide. They're traveling to Arkansas, and they're 33.5-point favorites this week. But one of the best bets in college football all season, and I'm surprised I haven't mentioned this. I talked to Maddie about this, but is Alabama first half. They're 5-0 in the first half spread in their last five games. They're minus 18 in the first half this week, or 18-point favorites against Arkansas. So we'll look to play them again here. Their last five games, first half scores, Chief, 44-14 at halftime last week against LSU, 21-3 against Auburn 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 28-3 at Kentucky a month ago, 27-0 against Ole Miss, and 5 weeks ago, 28-10 at Tennessee. So Saban likes to put his foot on the gas in that first half and get a huge lead, and then typically what he does is calls the dogs off probably midway through the second half. So that's what we're going to look in the college ranks for this week. It's, as I mentioned, it's been a great play so far, and they lost their number one rate wide receiver Jalen Waddle about a month ago. No problem, they fill in. Bama has five star recruits coming off the bench. Mac Jones is their stud quarterback. Devontae Smith, Najee Harris. I mean, they're just loaded right now, and I'm not sure who's going to beat that team, Chief. They are absolutely stacked.
If you hung around in the Buckingham Club when they were open for everybody, one of my buddies, Beldo, one of the craziest men on earth, but he knows an awful lot about college sports. I mean, almost a savant about it. Always would regale me with how many people various colleges have on scholarship. And, you know, it's hard to get 85 people. I mean, at one point in August, a few years ago, Stanford only had like 55 people. Alabama is always oversubscribed. When you say, where do these people come from? They've got some junior college deal where allegedly four or five guys or three guys every year will go to this junior college, and if you believe this, I got a bridge for you, pay their own tuition, and they can still practice or something, and waiting for somebody to leave or do something, and they give them the scholarship, and they actually have almost like a squad of people waiting to get scholarships, and other people can't even fill up the 85. So you can't tell me that Saban is not finding a way to make things good for people or families. I mean, just saying. I can't prove it. I'm not going to accuse. Well, I guess I sort of did. But, I mean, with the idea that you would go allegedly pay your own tuition at a junior college, you know, whatever. I'm talking too much. We only got a couple of minutes. You got a couple in the pro ranks?
Yeah, sure. Let me fly through them. So we have the Minnesota Vikings at Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bucks are 6.5-point favorites this week. Bucks are coming off a loss and a bye. So far this year, the Bucs, and particularly Tom Brady off a bye, week two, they lost their opener, week two at home against the Panthers, 131-17. Week six, they came off a loss, they beat the Packers 38-10 at home, and week 10, they came off a loss and they blew out Carolina, and then week 12, they came off a loss and they covered it against the Chiefs at home. So we're going to take the Bucks again, and Brady really off a loss and a bye week is really almost automatic. So we'll look there for them. And then we're going to go to the New York Football Giants. They're hosting the Arizona Cardinals this week. Giants are 3-point underdogs at home. Giants are now 5-7, tied for first place in the NFC, very much alive to win the division. We're going to look at the Giants as the underdog here. They went to Seattle last weekend as a 10.5-point underdog, won the game outright. Defense has been playing really, really well and kind of flying under the radar a little bit just because of the slow start. But they've won four in a row and are 5-2 in their last seven. And the Cardinals, struggling now. Tried to back them last week, but Kyler Murray, their star quarterback, has a shoulder injury, and now they're traveling cross country for that early start time against the Giants. And we're going to look back to the Giants there. And then last one, Chief, we have the Jacksonville Jaguars playing the Tennessee Titans in Tennessee. The over is over under 52.5. We're going to look to play the over here.
Wow.
Titans defense has been atrocious last four games, giving up 31 points and 382 yards a game. The Browns had 38 points at halftime last week against the Titans. Jaguars are not a very good team, but they're moving offensively with former Bears QB Mike Glennon. You may recall, Chief.
Yeah.
He's taken over for them, and they're actually putting up some points. So we're going to look at playing over the total there. Some good weather down in Florida this week. So that's what we're looking at for plays this week.
Thanks, Colin. We have to dash. Good. We'll keep those in mind, and thank you very much. I'll get you
next week,
buddy. We're going to go right to Carl. David?
Yes. Yeah, we're going right to Carl.
Carl, you there, buddy?
I most certainly am. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I had some stuff I wanted to talk to you about regarding valuations, and maybe you remember because you got the memory of an elephant, for God's sake. What were the one or two IPOs in 2000 that came out right before the thing collapsed, and people we used to point to those and say, oh, I got those two. Those were... I'm not trying to say that because of the IPOs this week we're going to collapse or anything, but I can't remember the names of those companies, and I'm going.
Oh, Lord, I don't remember those. I know, you know. Funny thing is, in the context of that, though, I sold my internet company to Windstar, and that deal was closed in 1998, as we came into 1999. And so, all through the next year, I had everybody I knew telling me that I should have taken the company public.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, absolutely everyone, okay, that was telling me that, you know, the advisors, because, you know, M&A guys that were, you know, were in the middle of that, right? And we talked about it. We contemplated doing it. And I knew the bubble was on. I knew that, you know, a lot of air going in. And I didn't know where the pin was.
Yeah,
but I knew that there would be a pin.
That's a
and you know, the nightmare scenario is you're halfway through it and it blows up, right? Because then you're hosed.
Well, yeah, hey,
so I'm, you know, and I'm like, you know, I'm too late. You know, a year earlier, if I decided that was where to go, and we'd had the revenue, and we'd had the expansion plans in place, and we'd proven that the model would scale, and you know, yada yada. If a year earlier we were where we were a year later, yeah, I probably would have been able to get away with that. As it stood, I don't know if I actually would have got it done before it blew up or not.
Well, it comes down to, you know, people's, and I obviously, you know, that I deal with an awful lot of clients at, you know, several places now, and, you know, obviously I love them all, but clients are, they're clients. I mean, and you're going to find somebody that, you know, my grandfather, who was a boilermaker, a self-made guy in the railroad, right? I mean, he loved stocks as he got older, and he'd say, Tom, don't ever be afraid if you sell something, you think it's a good sale, and you know, especially if you made some money, don't ever be afraid to leave a little something for the next guy. And now that mentality clearly has not made it till today. I mean, God, if you say, well, gee, you know, I think, you know, whatever, .com Corp is pretty high at 205, and the client maybe sells it, and it goes to 210, and 3 weeks later it's 20, they're still pissed they didn't get to 210.
It's like, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's only so much you can do to deal with that. And you say, well, for God's sake, I mean, we're throwing numbers around here like there's no tomorrow. But hey, I wanted to, what Kevin brought up, I don't know if you were listening, about the China situation and Biden.
Yes, yeah, I know. I listened to most of the first hour, yeah.
But the thing that I want to kind of zero in on, to me, that's not necessarily news, or new, it definitely is news. But what, especially in this day and age, you and I have talked, you know, we're pretty much doing every week now, which is great. We've talked about several worldwide problems in the last few years that you've been on. And just to get those things on the front page, I mean, I miss our girl, AV, because she's been buried in school, and she's not helping us out in the morning as much. But she used to give me stuff we'd write in the morning, and all of a sudden she'd pull something up on her phone, and nothing dirty, unfortunately. And she'd have some news out of Ukraine or someplace where there's like a war going on. We don't even know about it. I mean, it's just, and she'd say, look, these guys just invaded here. Are we going to talk about it on the show? And I go, hey, V, who the hell even knows where the places are you're talking? I mean, the stuff that can come into on the page for one day in the news and then be gone for 6 months. Does anybody actually think that, like, there's no Palestinian refugees this year because we haven't heard about them or anything, or there's nothing going on? We seem to have a limit to what we, and I can understand that because most people are working, especially now. You're trying to make ends meet or you're not making ends meet. But Kevin is absolutely correct. If somebody, I'm going to say if most of the citizens of this country, if you could force them into a, I'll use the term jail cell, and make them learn the China problems and who's making money and who isn't and who's using child labor and who's using this. Everybody would get to the point where they were seriously pissed off. And how do you make that happen? I don't think you do. I think the idea of that's how the no goodness of today's world managed to operate. It never reaches a point to where it's a problem enough for anybody to do anything about it.
Well, take a look at what happened here coming into the, you know, this election season, okay? It has now come out that Barr blackballed the Biden investigation so that it would not end up in the press. Okay? Now, that's our own government that did that. And so, of course, the press is not interested when they hate Trump and they would like to see the other guy win anyway. They're not interested in doing any investigative digging. But what is the locus of this entire thing? It's China influence peddling and maybe money laundering. All right. But you think Swallow's the only one who's been, you know, poking some cute Chinese chick? And oh, by the way, these are people that have access, you know, they have clearances, all right? Isn't there supposed to be some kind of attention being paid to people running around with classified information?
As you know, our buddy Wayne said when he was at the NSA that the lunch menu was considered, like, top secret. They've got everybody following. They got everything being so top secret, they don't even know what it is or isn't, Carl. But I say the difference
I understand that. I'm just, I just look at all of this stuff that's going on right now, and then some of the other allegations that are flying around, which you can't put credibility on them yet because they're not proved. But, you know, things like, maybe those nice voting machines were actually connected to the internet at the time that they were doing tabulation.
Right.
And therefore, the people that decided they were going to play games knew exactly how many games they had to play in the middle of the process. Now, that violates every single principle of any kind of fair contest, in that no information leaves the counting room until you're done.
I don't disagree, but the only thing I will say is that when I push back on you and Kevin, you know it's not because I don't agree with you. It's because what we learned in the Bush Gore thing in Florida. This is America. Everybody has an attention span of a gnat, right? Not everybody,
yep.
But and nobody likes a whiner. Nobody likes a loser. So even if you could find out that somebody de-pantsed your quarterback on the last play. And the penalty didn't get called. Hey, that's football. Quit complaining. Quit whining. No sniveling. That's America. So in Florida, when what's her name? She was fairly attractive for she wasn't a kid. What's her name? Harris, the Secretary of State.
Yeah.
As soon as she declared Bush the winner, before she should have. I happen to think that Bush actually did win. It's before she did. 2 days later. Even Gore's mom didn't want him whining anymore if she was still alive. It's just the way America is. And right now, everybody's comfortable or is resigned to the fact, except for a few, that Biden's a winner And the more Trump complains, the more he ruins his chances to win next time. It's just the way we are. I'm not saying
I understand that, but here's you know, when you get down to it, it's like, you know, I read through the entire Texas filing, okay? The gist of the filing is, you know, everybody is going off like, you know, like somebody stuck a firecracker in a bad place and lit it, right? And the reality of it is it comes down to one question, just one question, and that is, we know that the legislature has the plenary authority to set election rules in the states for federal elections. It's in the Constitution. It's black letter. It's one sentence. That's the end of the discussion, okay? And that was why Bush v. Gore went the way it did, because the state of Florida tried to change the rules outside of the legislature. They had the Secretary of State, they had the county people doing things that were outside of the law that had been passed through the legislature of the state of Florida. That is why the Supreme Court stepped in and said, nope, you're stopping this BS right now. It had nothing to do with safe harbor. It had to do with the fact that is what the Constitution requires, and you broke the rules, and that's it. You're done. Goodbye. Get out. All right, so what we have now is a number of states, a whole bunch of states, that in the months leading up to the contest took actions outside of the legislative process and changed the rules. Now, they could have gone back to the legislature and got them passed, in which case it would have been fine, but that's not what they did. And then you have Pennsylvania, which tried to throw it out on the principle of lashes, which is insane because you don't have injury until the contest takes place.
Right.
Okay? And so you essentially have an entire court system that turned around and said, not only does this authority in the federal constitution not rest where you say it does, but we're going to bar your complaint because you didn't complain before you had an injury, which you can't do because you have no standing. All right, so essentially, we either have a constitution that means something and binds certain actions and certain powers in certain places, or we don't. It's a binary question.
You know that my position on this all along is that I agree with you and Kevin, and actually, for everybody in this show, even the righties and the lefties, agree with what you just said. And yet what I'm saying is, it's been so far behind the bus for 20 years. I mean, if I walk into Northwestern Hospital today with a bad appendix, and I say, I want the same price, I don't have any insurance, I want the same price as Blue Cross, they're going to laugh at me. And if I take that to court, which I should win in 30 seconds, they're going to laugh at me. The people, if my bar is shut down in Chicago, and I take it to court and say, Uncle Jay is way past his 30-day emergency powers, he hasn't gotten anything from the legislature, he has no right to shut my bar down, they're going to laugh at him. This train that you and Kevin are talking about, by the way, which I happen to be on, is so far outside the station, Carl, it's almost like we can't even talk about it. Nobody cares. They do whatever they want.
I know. And you know, but you know what? We do this in so many different places, okay, which is a huge, I mean, you know, well, you know me, I've been ranting about this kind of stuff for how long now? Or it's been, you know, 20 years, or I've been writing the ticker for 13. And where did it start? It started because the black letter law within the FDIC, within the regulations governing bank regulation, was that the language says the FDIC shall, okay, and then it goes on to list a whole bunch of things. They weren't doing it, and that's why we had the blow up back in 2007 and 2008.
Oh, sure, no doubt.
And now, you know, we got the same sort of thing going on, and people, stick your fingers in yours, la 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 la. And I'm like, you know what? We got the same thing going on with foreign influence peddling. It's been going on forever. Right? It's not, you know, this is not just, you know, Swalwell is hardly the first to have, you know, have played with a honeypot, right? But, you know, did you see the complaint out of Witless this morning over in Michigan? You know, your friend's next door, well, kind of next door, you're right across the lake, that the crazy chick that was running around saying basically, you know, hey, it's time for the vigilantes to go kill Trump people. And she gets stripped of her committee assignments. And the governor says, oh, you shouldn't have done that. That's too harsh of a punishment. Excuse me, if you or I did something like that on video, on social media, the FBI would be at our door.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, we gotta go to break here, but the question is, why do we seemingly increasingly put up with it? Or do you and I and Kevin and a lot of the listeners just get closer and closer to details on an issue and not realize it's happening all over the place, and why are we even looking at it? I mean, SP Futures down 26 and the NASDAQ Futures down 86. I hope it's the former and not the latter, but I'm not sure. We'll talk about more when we come back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Dave Scatino. We have Mr. Carl Denninger with us as well. S&P futures are struggling to come back here, but we are coming back some. We're only down 23. We're down 32 when we came in. As the futures down 75, they were down over 100, over 100 when we came in. Dow futures only down 192. They were in the mid-2s. But still, we're down day after, well, down morning after we were up last night. The Nikkei down 103.4%. Shanghai down 26.8%. Hang Seng up 95.4%. In Europe, we got a sell-off here. We've got, I asked Carl about this big news of the European Union. But the DAX down 202. That's 1.5%. FTSE down 42.6%. Kick around down 47.8. We've got the, obviously the Brexit thing they're still fighting about with this weekend is yet another supposed deadline. How many deadlines does that make? About 100 now. 10-year, 0.89. Bund, minus 0.63. Which will lead me to my first question for Carl. Japan, 0.02, where they've been forever. Oil down 8 cents, 46.70. Brent down 20 cents, 50.05, but generally a big week for oil. Natural gas up 3 cents, 258. RBOB unchanged at 131. We got gold, actually rallying a little bit now, up 279, 1840. So they actually had a positive week. Last week was a bad week. Silver down 11 cents, 23.98. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. It's 7:35 in Chicago. Traffic picking up slightly this morning. Still running very smoothly. There is one incident on, there was an accident on Route 83 at US 20. In weather today, Chicago back to normal after two beautiful sunny days. Currently it's 38 and cloudy. Today's high is going to be 44, and we shall see a bunch of rain. In Phoenix, 49 and partly cloudy. They will have a high today of 64 with some sun. In sports, in the NFL Thursday night game, the Rams beat the Patriots 24-3. Sunday NFL football, the Bears host the Texans and Arizona will be at the Giants. College football, Michigan, Ohio State canceled. Illinois to take on Northwestern, Iowa plays Wisconsin. In the NBA, Bulls start their preseason and they will play the Rockets. Back to you, Tom.
What I should have mentioned is Disney, after they said they got 186 million or I'm sorry, 86 million subscribers at their new service, is up $12 today. So that's a huge move in Disney. They're trading $167.40. So if you're long Disney, you're putting a little champagne in your orange juice this morning. I imagine Carl is. He's a long Disney kind of guy, aren't you, Carl?
No, I don't own that one. And maybe I should have, but, you know.
This morning.
Disney is kind of a funny company because, you know, of course, the visible face of them is the parks, right?
Yeah.
Which have been rammed from all sides by this COVID stuff. And the not so visible side of it is everything else. And like so many other firms, it's hard to get your arms around, okay, you know, who wins, who loses in a situation like this in terms of what parts of it. Because the streaming, you know, that was something that they've been working on for quite a while. And it was essentially their answer to Reed Hastings and Netflix, right? Is, you know, hey, we want to get the content. We want to make the money. The blankety blank with him, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, and I can understand that. Why would you, you know, why do you give somebody a piece if you think you can do a better job of it yourself? I still think that down the road, there is a major problem for all of these streaming media companies in that what drove the adoption of this thing in the first place and what got it going was cable bills went from being, you know, $25, $30 a month to $150, right? And so if you have fragmentation within that market, it ends up being $150 again. And now there is a problem because who's going to win and who's going to lose? And I'm not sure who ends up on what side of that yet.
Well, I don't know the, that being the tech guy that you are, I don't know what the inroad of 5G or whatever is, but I would always argue, Matty and I always argue kind of way in. I was always arguing, he'd say, you know, I got rid of my cable. I'd say, no, you didn't. He's like, what do you mean? I use Hulu, I do Netflix. I go, so how does that get to your TV? What do you mean?
Yeah, down the cable.
Down the cable. I mean, I said, all that's going to happen is your bill is going to still be $250. It's going to be $50 for the cable and $200 for the service. What's the difference?
Yeah, well, that's the problem is that, and the 5G thing sounds good. And actually, its biggest impact is going to be that in places where there is no wire today, you'll be able to get services. One of the reasons that I bought where I bought my home is because I can't do what I do without wired service of some kind. Satellite internet does not work for what I need to be able to do. And so it's not an option, and there were plenty of places that I really liked, but they were not serviceable. I couldn't get anything there, all right? And so, you know, but this does change because in the next couple of years, and I think T-Mobile is going to be first, But in the next couple of years, you're going to be able to buy a box that looks like a Wi-Fi router that, that basically works anywhere and gives you 5G class internet service wherever you are. It's going to be about as good as a cable connection is today. And then the cable companies are in a lot of trouble because they have built a model that originally they so I did some of the original studies when they were looking at doing this, when this whole DOCSIS thing first started. And the problem was selling internet service standalone, the equipment you had to put in order to make it work, you could not make the numbers pencil out by selling internet service. And you didn't need that stuff for cable TV. But you did need it to provide the two-way service. And the numbers, the math just didn't work. So when you got to the point that people started being able to buy $40 WrestleMania, yeah. you know, by pushing a button on your remote, and they started doing the pay-per-view movies and stuff like that, you needed that same infrastructure to do that. So essentially, there was a cross-subsidization model that made internet service originally reasonably affordable. As you start taking that away from the cable companies, the cross-subsidization goes away. This is why your cable internet bill has been going up over the last 10 years and is going to keep going up. And then you're going to have the 5G wireless companies that are going to come in and start selling $50 a month internet service with a little box that looks like a Wi-Fi router. And now all of a sudden, the Comcast of the world that want $80 or $90 are going to be in a world of hurt.
Well, they also have a massive tax advantage.
Yeah, they do, but you know, the thing is that there's going to be, you know, there's going to be problems here, okay? There are dislocations coming in this market, and the question becomes who wins and who loses when it all shakes out. And I've always got my nose to the ground on this, and I'm always paying attention with it, but I don't know how to handicap this yet. I can't tell you, you should buy this because these guys are going to win. Okay? It's not that simple. And part of the problem with doing this on an over-the-air basis is that over-the-air spectrum is much less efficient on a per-customer basis than pulling cable, especially fiber, in customer-dense areas. But in places that are not dense, like rural America and pretty much anywhere outside of a major city, the math goes the other way.
What's if I bought a place somewhere out there, not that I'm a farm kind of guy, how bad is like the Hughes network cable or the Dish, what, I can't upload on that stuff, or what's the deal?
Well, so the problem is Dish, okay, so Dish for television is essentially all downstream, right? The only thing you need any kind of upward for is, you know, these days you don't need it at all because the encryption is within the box, but you used to have a phone line that was plugged into the original Dish unit.
Right.
And the reason is you had to get the authentication information back and forth to be able to do things like buy pay-per-view movies. The issue you have with satellites is that when you're going to geostationary satellites, which is what you have to do in order to have a dish that points in one place, right? When you do that, the problem is the distance is so far that the latency becomes a second and a half or thereabouts to get something up and back down. So what all the cable companies do that provide this, the Hughes's of the world that do the satellite internet, is they all cache information in those boxes. And when you're web browsing and things like this, this works okay. But when you're trying to do something that's interactive, it doesn't work at all. And the bandwidth requirement going the other direction, simply because the transponder time is expensive and you know, putting those birds up there costs a whole ton of money. When you're doing that kind of thing, the bandwidth upbound is very, very limited. And so there's all kinds of algorithms that they use to try to avoid somebody being a pig and basically drowning out their neighbors, which otherwise is going to happen. Now, Musk and his Starlink constellation is an attempt to fix this by making not only having a lot more satellites, but having them in low Earth orbit where the latency problem is much less.
Well, I know that I went out, I don't know where I put it, Carl. I'm sure if I cleaned my place, I'd find it. They came out with that radio that you can actually put, for any of you who's ever sat across the street at Cubs Park in one of those places where the place have cable,
right?
You hear a whole crowd cheer before you see anything, right?
Well, right, yeah, because there's a latency issue there, yeah.
So the only, but your radio, if you're listening to, you know, I was going to say GN, talk about if you listen to Cubs on the radio, it's pretty much instant, right? Or if you know, or if you have your an air antenna, and it, well, it's not on channel 9 anymore at all, but so you can't even do that. But so they came out with this radio where you could actually get a delay on the thing,
right?
Up to like 8 seconds or whatever. So I get this radio, and then I found it a few years ago. I think the delay is up to like 10 or 12. So the radio's not even good.
Yeah, and the reason that that happens with modern television is modern television isn't an analog signal anymore. What happens is you take the image and the sound, and it's encoded into a digital form, and then sent down the wire and decoded, you know, either within your television if you're doing a streaming service, or in the box if you've got a box sitting on top of your TV. And the problem with that is that that takes time. Okay? So it's not the transmission time that's the issue within local markets. It's that you have to encode and decode that, and that is a, you know, so there is a latency built into there. And part of the latency problem is there's the technology works on sending differences up to a certain point. Then it sends a keyframe that has all the information. And so as a result of that, there is an inherent delay, because the way you conserve bandwidth is if I've got two frames and, you know, the guy's arm moved, you know, this tiny fraction of an inch, but the rest of the picture is the same, all I have to do is send the difference. Okay? I don't send the entire frame again. I just send the differences. And then after every so many frames, you have to send a full frame so you have another reference again. And that's where that delay comes from in digital service.
Well, it's interesting because your buddy Blair Hull, he took the whole SIBO down one day, you know, for something like that. SIBO, when I first started, if we were to say to somebody, what's the capacity of like the exchange, it would always be in how many contracts per day could we do, right? And it was always in contracts, in transactions,
right?
But as time went by, transactions were, you know, the pimple on the ass of an elephant. It had to do with how many quotes can we put out,
right?
And because that was really the information stream. And the SIBO, when they developed their own quote system, had the wherewithal to say, okay, if they quote something every 2 seconds or 1 second or whatever you did, you'd look at it and you'd say the quote's now an eighth, three eighths, or an eighth, a quarter. You'd look at it and you'd see if it was already an eighth, a quarter, you wouldn't change it. So Blair Hull says, in my stocks, I want to use my own quote system. He had, you know, 20 stocks or something, which is nothing compared to the old SIBO. But in his system, he didn't do that. Every time he put them up, every second or every half a second, he changed them all, even if they were the same. But an eighth a quarter, he changed it to an eighth a quarter. They went off and came back on. Well, he took the whole system down, because if you did that every half a second, every tenth of a second, if you didn't look to see, you're only changing the stuff that needed changing. You were changing like millions of these things every second. It was like, and he took the whole place down until they figured out what was wrong. It was Blair Hall's system. It impacted the whole place. It just, because they didn't have the capacity for all that stuff. I got one for you. One quick question. Yep. I don't want to get back to this China stuff. When the CBOE first started, and I sort of gave you a hint, it was transaction based, you know, that they were concerned about matching up trades, right? What system did they buy and use at the time? It was 1973-ish.
Boy, I don't know.
And when I tell you, you're going to be pissed. Name
All right, shoot.
The United Airlines ticketing system. Because it was transaction
based. Are you serious?
Yeah, it was transaction based.
Carl? Well, yeah, but I mean, that. Okay.
They matched trades the same way people matched tickets to passengers.
Right.
That was the basis of the system.
Right. So essentially they adapted. Okay. Okay. So, you know, like the old Sabre setup, huh?
Yeah.
Huh.
But then, of course, when they started doing all the quotes and everything, the old system sat in a box and they kept taking pieces off the old system to where the old system only did the transactions. And all the other stuff.
Yeah, what else was new, right? Yeah.
And then all the other stuff was all on new stuff. Because of your quotes and everything like that. But Kevin and I and you have talked about something. It comes down to priorities and accomplishing things. And when you see you know, love him or hate him, Joe Biden's doing what presidents, elects, whatever he is now, do at this point. You start putting people together. But as you and I know, time is fleeting, right? And so when you get your first cabinet meeting together, what can you appreciably do the first year? And the first thing for these guys is they are politicians. I mean, and they're good at what they do. And don't ever think that the business of politics isn't a business, because I hear businessmen say that all the time. If they just acted like businessmen, we'd all be better off. They do act like businessmen. It's just a
different
business.
Well, of course they do, yeah.
But now, the question is, if somebody like you or Kevin were to say, this Chinese crap, they send these good-looking ladies over here, or guys, they get involved, they get in these companies, they get in government, they're not above, you know, making like they actually care about the guy who runs the Foreign Relations Committee, or lady, and they're in like a tick on a dog, right? Now, you could say if I was president, I could say, Carl and Kevin, we're going to make that. I didn't put Frank in that committee because he actually agrees with you guys on this. I want to make this my first priority. It may be the biggest danger, but there's no way on earth that could be my first priority, because it's not, even if you're successful, it's not going to hit the press for a year. And the press is going to say,
right,
what is this crap? What have you been doing? What's the problem? How long has it been going on? Whose names are involved? Their reaction is going to be something that's not even remotely what you want it to be, right? And so, but so how do you even like go about that? I mean, Kevin mentioned that there's no that the press, and you know, again, he doesn't like the liberal press, but the press doesn't do this and that and the other thing. And I'm going to say that the reason why the press doesn't do that is they don't have any budgets to do anything. I mean, if you were to walk into the Channel 9 here in Chicago, or Channel 2, and you were a young Walter Jacobson and say, I want, you know, $5,000 because I want to do some, I want to become one of the homeless people under the bridge, and I want to do a 2-week expose about homeless people in Chicago, which are growing by the second, they'd say, we don't have $5,000. Get out of here. So, I mean, how do you separate, you know, the stuff we would like to see, not just the slant, but the depth of investigation? How do you separate that from the fact that everybody thinks now they shouldn't pay for news, that it should just be on their internet, and they don't care if it's any good or not? I mean, I get more stuff from the right than I do from the left, but by the time I get this, the third piece of paper, I can tell one person wrote the damn article, and everybody,
well,
just,
yeah,
it's just spinning around. I mean, the best was, it's a small story, but Eddie Johnson, the police chief here, was drunk in his, well, allegedly drunk in his car, and then they just woke him up and let him drive home, right? Well, he had been over at the Ceres Cafe, now, which is one of, I've been going to the Ceres Cafe for 40 years, right? I know the people over there like they're my brothers and sisters. Nowhere in the article, when a guy got caught at 12:30, did it say that the Ceres closes at 8 o'clock. So obviously there's 4.5 hours at some other saloon or some other place, right? But the point, I could tell, just because I knew a lot about the place, that one person had wrote this article. I think it came out of Crane's, and it was not very well done. Now, you would think, 20 years ago, Carl, that there would be news people there interviewing people, find out, what is it about the series? The simple question is, by the way, when do you close?
Right.
I mean, and yet, then I saw it in the Sun-Times. One of my guys tweeted it to me, or texted it to me. Then it came to the Tribune. Then it became somewhere else. Then it was in New York. Then it was in the Washington Post. I could tell they were just, it was like we used to do in high school, where one guy did the Latin homework and five guys cheated off him because nobody wanted to translate the Latin. By the time it was the fifth guy making it different from every guy he got it to, it was a story about Mars, not even Gaul, right? You know, but I could tell because I knew so much about it, this particular thing, not that I know about anything, is that I could tell one person did a half-assed job writing the first article, and nobody else even went there to do anything, and all they did was cheat off the first person's homework paper. And yet, how is
it? And you know what? And they all do that, but that's one of the big things that's happened, and it's gotten worse. All right, I mean, we used to have some investigative journalists that would go out, and they put their nose down to the stone, and you know, whatever it took. And I don't know that they ever had huge budgets, but at least they went out there and they did that work. nowadays, you take a look at what happens within the media on both sides of the aisle. I don't care if it's left slanted or right slanted or whatever have you. And exactly what you described is all you get.
Yeah.
And so as a result, there is no local media anymore. For all intents and purposes, it doesn't exist. And the big investigative outlets, they don't exist. You know, everyone says, oh, you know, the gray lady. Well, you know what? The gray lady is just as guilty of doing the same dang thing that everybody else is doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you want to do local stuff, you get yourself a smoking hot weather girl, and you get a sports guy that everybody's known forever, and you fill in local news on the other stuff. I mean, everybody there, the assumption is that you're getting your national news somewhere else. They don't really talk about that. So, like, nobody's waiting until 10 o'clock at night to find out that the market was up or down. I mean, that part they're probably right. But, I mean, when you say budget, I don't think these guys, I don't think they have a nickel. I mean, look at the Tribune today. You're not going to find, like, the Washington Post. I mean, I don't know if Jeff Bezos is good or bad. He owns the place. But the article that the guy wrote several years ago, I forget the guy's name. God, it wasn't the name of the article, but he talked about the horseshoe of despair, where it's starting in West Virginia, going south to Alabama, crossing back way up to Arkansas and Missouri, how that whole area of the country is just, you know, it's like the Middle Ages compared to other places that are actually, I mean, going someplace. We're talking about nothing but disability checks and drug checks. And that was probably a 3 or 4 page, on any given day, 5 to 6 day study. And I'm going to say they had to pay for his car, his hotels. I mean, I'm not saying it's $1 million, but it's an investment on the part of the Washington Post.
They spend money on it,
So you're not going to see the Tribune give that to anybody now. Surely I can see the Sun-Times do it. Maddie Weber and I have this discussion all the time. He goes, Chief, you're closer to the news now than you ever have been. I said, Maddie, in terms of closer, maybe, but if there's half as many reporters, how can the news be better? Well, you got me there. I mean, no, it's a...
Well, and that's the problem is that, like, you know, when I lived in Northwest Florida, when I first moved there, we had, within the region, we had 2 separate local papers. Okay, now I thought their best and highest use was fish wrap, but, you know, nonetheless, they were there and they actually had, you know, they had a couple photographers, they had a couple reporters that would go out and cover stories and, you know, do things. Well, guess what? All of that stuff got all rolled up, right?
Yeah.
Now both of those papers are actually one organization, which is not local at all. Okay. And there's still a guy with a digital camera that runs around and takes some pictures to, you know, when there's a hurricane.
Yeah.
Okay. But for the most part, that's all it is. And you can go on the 2-3 different places, and then you can go, you know, 3 counties over, and the same stories that are written by the same guy. And it's, there is no local news anymore. It doesn't exist.
Well, there's no city. They got rid of the city desk here in Chicago a while ago. And we had, I think his name was, God, where's Matty when I need him? We had a guy who, from the Tribune, who would cover homicides at night. Matter of fact, one time he was supposed to call in, so Matty calls him. He gets him on his cell phone. He was looking over a body down in Englewood. And I can't come on the show. I'm looking at a body. So, but I mean, he would do this. And I said to him, you know, you work for the Tribune. And, you know, he corrected me real quick. I don't think he worked for anybody, Carl. I think he got the police call. I think he went out and wrote up a story, and maybe they bought the story, maybe they didn't.
Right.
I mean, which is, so, I mean, it comes down to, a lot of this is priorities, but we only got less than a minute here. Are you going to go out and buy some Airbnb today?
No.
You know, they're one of the top, in terms of market valuation now, they're one of the top 65 companies in the world.
I know, and you know, I am blown away by the insanity of that, but this is the so-called gig economy, grab a piece of it, find a way to circumvent regulations that apply to everybody else, you know, every hotel and motel in the land, right? Yeah. And then figure out how to skim off that. Hello, Uber.
Yeah. Well, as Dr. J said real quick, we have time for one question. He said a lot of it has to do with smaller and smaller pieces of the company are available in the IPO, so everybody has to be in it. They almost have to do that. Do you think that's part of it?
Yeah, I do. And you know, I mean, there was a lot of that in the 1998-1999 time frame. I had, you know, for a while, I was getting small piece allocations in a lot of those IPOs, and I flipped them immediately.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then the brokers get all mad at you for doing it. And I'm like, well, this is a dog squeeze outfit. But if I'm going to get a 80% return in one day, yeah, I'm going to ring the register. Hello.
Well, sometimes the brokers get their allocation based on whether they're giving them. I use the term as strong hands. I think is the term. So if they're just going to flip them all, they don't want to give them that brokerage.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was a, you know, it is what it is.
All right, Kyle, we got a dash, buddy. Target you next week. S&P futures down not only 22, we're creeping back. NASDAQ futures down 73. Back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.